This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
This podcast is a proud member of the FanHub 100. Football without fans is nothing, so we've partnered with FanHub to put fans first. Search FanHub app to play your part in the journey.
The Custer's Black Podcast, whatever that is.
Hello. Welcome back.
You're right.
How you doing?
Not bad.
I mean, this bit ain't on Zoom, isn't it? We're not going to be on this bit, are we?
I mean,
don't be on this. This looks so awkward. Look at it.
I mean, I won't put it anywhere.
No, don't do that. Don't do that.
It does.
Like casting couches, Peter. See,
it does look a bit strange, doesn't it?
But yeah, we're recording quite a lot recently, actually.
Yeah, we've become fluent.
We've become an actual fucking podcast. Which is nice. We're doing this one. We've got Callum Taylor with us.
Yeah,
if you got, remember him, the old youth goalie.
Got a guest.
Yeah, so he'll be joining us in about 15 minutes, hopefully. But we thought we'd quickly gloss over the Notts County and Dorking game. We know. We obviously spoke with
James
from
Talking Wanderers.
Yeah, Talking Wanderers.
Yeah, very, very grateful to James for coming and having a chat with us. We are definitely going to do more of that, where we speak to other team fans as the season goes on. And then obviously, you know, as...
And hopefully before the game as well.
Yeah, we'll mix it up a little bit. We'll do some before, we'll do some after. And then maybe you get in touch with the bigger clubs in the league and you can get a bit of both. And it's with someone different.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Because it'll always keep it fresh then, and you don't have to keep listening to us. And it's always something a bit different. But yeah, they're coming thick and fast at the minute. We've got another couple lined up. It's become quite enjoyable.
Well, we had another expert line up, didn't we? But annoyingly,
he
kind of just fell flat at the last minute. So
yeah.
But we won't
write it off. But yeah, at the moment, it did fall a little bit flat. But as we said, we got Callum on, who, he made one first team appearance, but was in the youth teams for a decade, so saw a lot, and that's really what we're going to talk about, because there's some.
Well, he left under a cloud a bit as well, if you remember.
Yeah, and there's a lot going on right now that is under a very similar cloud.
Yeah,
and it needs to be addressed, and it needs. The lid needs blown off it, really. We're it's quite well documented. We've put our name to something, to a supporters group that want the chairman out of the football club. So not only do we put our names to that, we put our faces to that as well, and we are taking that very seriously. So hopefully Callum will be able to shed some light on, some of his experiences, stuff that he's actually seen, because there are sometimes it's difficult to know what to believe, because you get a lot of hearsay from people that, listen, don't get me wrong, some people are in the know, but then some, there's some bullshit out there as well. So hopefully to speak to a former player that left very, very recently, and as you say, left under a cloud, hopefully it might sort of open some more people's eyes to it, because I'll be perfectly honest, I still don't think enough people's eyes are open to what's going on.
Yeah, I agree. I think people think it's just a case of, I just don't think people understand the sheer scale of it. That's the issue. I think people think it's, yeah, cut the unpaid wages, well, he'll just get some money from somewhere and he'll be paid and that's it. But it's the knock-on effect of that. It's the whole, just even from the club's point of view, it's how much money are we owing to keep...
To everyone.
Everyone.
How much is the tax bill? Yeah, we don't actually know. We know there's an unpaid tax bill to HMRC. We know that court case has been adjourned. We don't know how much the tax bill is, and we don't know how long the adjournment is for. Yeah. We've got a very rough idea, but that's what I mean. It's hearsay.
Yeah.
We don't actually know the facts, and that needs to be addressed. We're constantly banging the drum about honesty and transparency. And that was going to change, apparently.
Yeah.
It hasn't.
No, not when it comes to Ron. No.
This is purely about Ron. Obviously, a lot of... And that's what makes it ultimately all the more frustrating. Everything else on the top of it, you know, you're... It's drastically changed. But, you know, you're building on quicksand, aren't you?
Oh, well, yeah. The foundations aren't quite...
Because the foundations...
They're sort of there, but there's... They're still missing a bit.
Yeah. So that we'll go on to more of that when we obviously chat with Cal. The two games last week, the Notts County game, obviously we're doing this slightly back to front, as we say, because we've already spoke to James about Dorking. But the Notts County game, quite honestly, the most I've enjoyed a game at Roots Soil in about 10 years.
Yeah, no, it's at least 5 years. It was... two good teams going at it.
I reckon it was actually the most I've enjoyed a game at Roots Hall since the second leg of the Stevenage playoff semi. And even that was nervy.
Yeah,
I only enjoyed it when we'd won.
Yeah,
I didn't enjoy it during it.
It was refreshing to see. I mean, first of all, fair play to them. They played some good football.
Yeah.
That'll be football that I think will frustrate a lot of people, but it's good football. I don't care what anyone says, that's good football. But we were also a good footballing team as well. Different style, but we're a good footballing team as well. It was just two good teams going at it. They were time wasting a bit or playing the ref a bit with the head injuries and stuff, but it wasn't as much as other teams had done. And it's just a really, really enjoyable game.
Mm.
Yeah, that's the only way I can put it. I still don't know we've got Kevin Wiley. I think I'll just say on every podcast. I don't understand how he's not playing in football league.
Has he ever played in football
league? Never. I don't understand.
I don't understand that.
And also, I don't understand how Eastley released him. He must have been leaving. It must have been a case that they knew he was leaving, so they technically released him. It was like, well, we know you guys, so we'll release.
Even if we wanted to, we know we can't keep you.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make any sense. It
makes zero sense.
Yeah.
He's the best midfielder we've had since Ryan Nerd. Yeah. Centre mid, 100%. Not even close. Some of the things I've seen.
He's an absolute maverick.
Yeah. So, that's pretty well sound. That it was just enjoyable. The only way I put it for me, it was just enjoyable.
Yeah, it was really, really...
From good. Both teams. I enjoyed watching it.
Yeah, it was
5 minutes in and I was like, these play good. I was like, these look good.
Fantastic advert for that level of football. And it, you know, BT played a blinder, really, getting it televised. That was obviously what they would have predicted, and they got it spot on, to be fair to them.
Yeah.
It was a great game.
Yeah, no, fair play.
I think encouraging signs for us in it, where we've come from behind twice as well. So we're not very far removed from having, you know, let's face it, a pretty barbaric defensive record. And 1-0 very quickly became 2-0. Within like 5 or 10 minutes a couple of years ago, didn't it? to have now developed a resiliency where, you know, you go 1-0 down at the top of the league. It's like, no, we know our jobs. We've got no panic stations at all. We're very calm. We don't rush. We know our capabilities. We know what we can do, and we know we'll get our chances. We've got good enough players in the team now that we will always create chances.
Yeah. Oh yeah, 100%.
And I think 100%. getting Jack Bridge in the team has obviously been pivotal to that.
Yeah, he's been a massive part of it. We might move on to that Dorking game afterwards. We have spoke about it, but as far as I'm concerned, cruise control. Whilst they did hit the post in the first half, I thought it was one of the most controlling first half football we've had all season. Probably the most controlling. And then the second half, because we're 2-0 up, we can sit back. Didn't really have to get out of second gear.
Yeah, we didn't really have to.
If that first half ends 0-0, that second half isn't like that. Yeah, obviously, they don't control. But they did control that second half, but didn't test the keeper once.
Collins not made a save.
Not like I remember anyway.
No, maybe
I'm wrong in saying that, but it was, so I thought they controlled it the second half, but we allowed them to. We knew they weren't really going to test us, and it was just professional performance.
Yeah, I said in the chat with James that from our point of view, the early goal massively helped.
Oh, because massively helped, yeah.
It was from that point on, we were literally in total cruise control. And that's not being disrespectful to them at all. What I just said, we know what we're capable of, and we know we can't, you cannot just go out with the attitude and think, well, we turn up, we win this, because you'll get stung. And that gets proven time and time again. But I don't think we've got a management, and I don't ultimately think we've got a set of players that have that attitude.
No, I
think we are on the top of, this is what I mean, on the pitch, we're an incredibly professional outfit. And that was a very professional job that we did on Saturday.
Yeah. And even off it with the people we have, you know, I don't think there's anyone that is unprofessional in that sense. It's just, unfortunately, we have to cut corners.
Yeah.
And then that's when obviously that does creep in a bit, the unprofessional.
Well, ultimately, we're cutting corners. Because the money that's put in is not enough.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So. That's ultimately what it boils down to.
Everyone at the club does a professional job.
You know, all right, yeah, we'll go back to this. It's absolutely disgusting that in the current state of the country, people ain't getting paid.
Yeah. We'll talk about that another time, but you're right. It's we've hopefully got something lined up for that, so we'll talk about that another time. But going back to Dorking, like you say, it wasn't the case of being disrespectful to them. I thought they were a good team before the game. I think they were the fourth highest scorers, but they conceded the second most. So their games were entertaining. And I think even after our game, they still have the second highest position in the league. Which probably shows where they've got their win from, is they frustrate people, go on, why aren't we getting the ball to Dorking? That's probably what it is. It is that we shouldn't be playing Dorking. It is that mentality. I don't care what anyone says, it's not right, but that is that mentality. So for us to not have that is good. It's good. But hopefully, well, saying that, should we just get him in?
Yeah. Well, do we really, really? Yeah, I can't speak. Can I cut that? We got 3 minutes.
We've got about 5 minutes.
Just really quickly preview Gateshead.
Yeah. I don't know anything about them as a team. They've obviously struggled losing them two players that went to Notts County.
I think you take that amount of goals out of any side at any level, yeah, you're going to struggle, aren't you?
So. I think where are they in the league now? They might be bottom now. I can't remember. But listen, if we do what we know we're capable of doing and turn up, and as long as we stay over the night before, then
because that was a
we should be fine.
They are bottom.
Yeah. So 2-3-0 again. comfortable.
Yeah. Again, and this is what I'm saying about you can't go out with the attitude and just expect that.
No.
I don't think we will, but as I say, I would expect a very similar level of performance to the Dorking game.
Yeah.
I expect us to turn up, but I expect us to be professional and get the job done.
Start well.
And I don't
hit them, early and almost, I'm not going to say shock them, because they're obviously going to expect the whole game, but you stun them early and just sort of...
Yeah, I'll be totally honest, I wouldn't really expect them to lay much of a glove on us.
If we
go out and perform, that I know the way we can perform.
Exactly, yeah, bottom of the league, and I'm assuming they're going to be bottom of the form, guys. So I wouldn't expect that. But you never know, do you? You never know. So I'm sure the management are going to drill it into them to... It just start fast, I think. Yeah. Start fast. I know nothing about them. I don't know the manager is. Is it going to be one of them games if we win? We seem to always get manager sacked, so is it going to be one of them? I don't know.
Yeah, I know it wasn't immediately after, but only a couple of weeks after, York have...
Yeah, said, yeah.
Quite, on the face of it, quite harshly sacked the manager.
No, pathetic. Pathetic, but...
Just got promoted.
Just got promoted. I think they were up mid-table when he took over in the north.
In the north, yeah.
So...
We know, don't we? It's a fickle game.
Yeah, even at this level.
Apparently, he turned down a Football League job like a month or so ago.
Yeah. But I mean.
It was probably Colchester.
But why are you doing it? So, I mean, he might have turned it down. But why would you then sack him? Wouldn't you almost be like, right, he's getting some interest. I don't see how they're going to bet that. But maybe I don't know. I don't know much about York. So,
no.
I don't know what their chairman is.
No, like.
I don't know a bit about their squad, in fact. They're not the.
Chairman,
he sounds like a nutter.
Oh, he's in.
There we go. I'm in.
Here he is.
Hello, mate. How are you doing? You all right?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, not bad, mate.
All good. Thanks for coming on.
Hello. No worries. Thanks for having me on.
That's all right.
Cheers, mate. Really appreciate this.
Well, how you been anyway? How are you coping?
Yeah, good. Yeah, just up in Bath at the moment. In my second year, my degree. But, yeah, doing well. Good to see Southend have been doing well on the pitch recently.
Yeah.
Obviously, just overshadowed a little bit by off the field. That's the issue at the moment. But
yeah, not a lot's changed in that sense.
Yeah, that's the issue, yeah. It's always been a good club in terms of the fans and the setup, but just, certain people in the club obviously just holding it back a little bit. But,
yeah.
What are you studying anyway, do you mean?
That's sports science, basically. So, I do a 3-year course and then decide what I want to do after that, whether it's I may specialise in something specific or I may change it for something else. But just see what happens over the next year, basically. I basically decide where I'm going to go from that and decide, what route I want to take.
Nice. Well, hopefully
Fair play, mate. Good luck with it all.
Thank you very much.
We hope you don't mind. We sort of almost want to take you back to the start for you, really, at Southend.
Yeah.
We've worked it out. Was you 9 when you joined the club?
Yeah, 9 I was, yeah.
Oh,
very, very young. So I started playing football relatively late for people, obviously professional, but I started when I was 7, when a lot of people started when about 4 or 5. But I don't know, my dad always wanted me to play football, but he never wanted to pressure me into it. And apparently he was just watching it one day. And I was just like, I want to play football. So he was buzzing, took me along. I went to Forest Glade. I was there. I went over there for a session. Decided to ask first session if I could go and goal. No idea why, but I did. Played a game that week. Saved the penalty first game, so I was kept in goal then. I think my dad realised it's not too bad, so sent me along to a few sessions with Anthony Dean, goalkeeper coach, and I went there for years and just fell in love with goalkeeping really. And I was at South. So I was at Forest Glade for about a year and a half, 2 years. And then I was going to go to Chelmsford because a lot of clubs wanted to sign me, but I was just enjoying where I was, had good friends there. And we decided it was time for me to take a step up. And I literally was at Chelmsford for 2 or 3 weeks. And then Southend scouts come along, asked me to come along the trial. Michael Marsh and Dave Johnson, who ended up going to Tottenham. They asked me to come along. I was there for about 6 weeks. And then they asked to sign me and then, it was there a long, long time, like 10 years of my life. So, obviously, since I had like a conscience, I just remembered being at Southend. So, it became a very big aspect of my life. Could I be going to school, I'd train Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, goalkeeper training, playing on Sunday. So it was just my life, really.
Yeah.
And I played up from the 9s, 10s, 11s, 12s, 13s, 14s, 15s, 16s, 18s, 21s, and it turned to 23s, and obviously eventually in the first team.
Yeah.
So I've seen it all really, yeah.
That is the whole journey, yeah. There won't be many players have done that.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of boys. It's sad, you see how many boys I've seen that have gone, and just you realise how many boys go through the whole process and just they don't get where they want to be and stuff like that. But it's just a harsh reality of football, really. But yeah, I met a lot of good people along the way. Like, for it was a very big, it was a big part of my life, but I enjoyed it. I was enjoying it. I was doing well. Obviously, the older you get, then it obviously becomes more scrutinised and it's a bit harder. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I was just playing football, really. And then obviously, the older you get, more politics come into it, and that's when it becomes a bit more confusing. But yeah, when I got to 16, got my scholarship, so obviously it was full time. And that was very different, obviously, from just training academies. It was in every day. And at the time, Lee Harrison was the goalkeeper coach, and he was brilliant. He was really, really good. And as soon as I was 16, I was going in, I was training with whoever it was at the time. It was Ox, Ted, Nathan. Training them when I was 16, or even before, sometimes they brought me in for the odd day, even at school. Training with Dan Bentley, he was still speak to him a little bit now. But yeah, just it was a great setup, especially the goalkeeper setup was good. But yeah, it was just Lee Harrison was a big part of the club, and I think when he left, I think a lot of people were disappointed with that, because we just kept it together, even within the first team when I was in there. Like, he was such a big character in the change room, even for the outfield players. He was a set piece coach. He was speaking to all the lads. He was keeping everyone. He was a big part of the team. And then obviously, when the gaffer changed during COVID, Sol went, and he brought in all his own staff. He just changed it a lot for me. It changed a lot for me, and I know it changed it a lot for a lot of people. And yeah, that year after COVID was hard, because obviously, I just broke through. I was in the first team squad for like 2 or 3 months, and I was enjoying it, and I was getting trained every day. I was training with the first team, all the sessions, really, really enjoying it. Just when I was playing for the 18s, I was playing well. I was just in really good form, and obviously COVID came at the wrong time, really. And Sol went during COVID, Lee went, and it just, yeah, it was a big change. And then when I come back, the gaffer at the time just didn't really give me a look into honest, just, from day one, I didn't, because there was COVID bubbles at the time, I wasn't allowed to train with the first team unless I got a certain amount of tests. And at the time, it wasn't as easy to get tests. And so, yeah, I was getting, if I was lucky, one goalkeeper session a week. And that would just be, it wouldn't be with the first team keepers or anything. So at the time, this is when there was 18 bubble, there was 23 bubble, first team bubble. And the 23 just so small, because obviously at the time the first team weren't doing too well, so we had so many younger ones going up. So the 23 sessions, you're talking like 5 or 6 people some days. So I was not getting goalkeeper sessions. I was training with 5 or 6 people, and it was just normally just predominantly based around them. And then when there was a game, which was rare at the time, the 23s, they were just popping down whoever the number 2 was at the time. So I wasn't getting games. I wasn't getting goalkeeper training. And the training I was getting just wasn't ideal, really. And some of that was down to COVID. And some of that could have been done better from the setup. But I just knew at that point I wasn't getting a look in. I wasn't given any fair reflection, really. So I felt like I was just being given no choice, if you know what I mean. But it was a shame it ended the way it did. But I still, especially the fans, even I made one first team appearance, but the amount of fans that still message me now or support me on, it's great, really. That's why I always watch the club. So when I was young, I'm a Man United fan, to be honest. My dad drilled that into me from when I was really, really young. But from when I was, as long as I can remember, I joined Southend. Even before then, I went to a game. I could not tell you what year it was, but I meant to watch Southend against Norwich. No idea what year it was, but I was very young, is all I remember. And that was the first game I ever went to. I must have been 5 or 6 Went to that. And then as soon as I joined the club, me and my dad just, we loved going. Like, a lot of the lads had to be encouraged to go. But me and my dad, going to the train Saturday morning, went and watched every game. We went away games. We went to that Morecambe game where we didn't quite do it on the final day, but we did it at Wembley. Yeah, that was a good trend. But we did away days. We did Wigan away where we lost 4-1 with Ted was in goal. We did that. Done basically every home game. So, Southend become very much my second, if not my first team at the time. Like, we enjoyed, my dad was like a massive fan as well. And he's obviously from Northern Ireland. So, he just found a love in it. And we loved going. And, it was just, I fell in love with the club. And the way the fans were, they were always, even when I was like 14, 15, when I was getting call-ups for like Northern Ireland, I was always getting a lot of fans supporting me and wishing me well. And it made me just want to really do well for the club. And obviously when I was younger, I had a lot of good coaches. Like when I was growing up, some good goalkeeper coaches, like Phil Skelton was there for a bit. People won't know about him, but he was a really big part of my progress when I was at the club. Age group coaches I had. Paul Barry, he's at Crystal Palace now. He was really, really good for me. Even Stuart Fowler was there, but he was good for me. The whole way up, really. Temmie was really good. And I was really enjoying it. Danny Heath, I can't speak well enough. He's a great lad. Danny Heath was always good to me. Always had my back. He's always very fair. So I always appreciated him. I had him from when I was 9 to when I left when I was 19, really. So I knew Danny for a long, long time. There was a lot of good people in the club. Like, I know I'm not really going to go into names, but there's certain people, obviously, I'm not really too fond of the way they handle certain things. But at the same time, 90% of the people that I met along the way were really, really good to me. And obviously, in terms of the fan base, everyone, I don't think I've ever had a bad experience with it, even to this day. But, just really, I was there for a long, long time. And I still look out for the results and really hope they do well. I've still got friends at the club as well. So I want them to do well. It's just, and to be honest, a lot of the people I say I had issues with aren't at the club anymore. So I just wish the club well. Like, and Kev left for a bit when he went to Bristol, but I had Kev, I was young, but when I was like 15, 16, I used to go and train the Saturday mornings with 23s and Kev was the manager then. And he was really good to me in my first year as a 23 manager. He was a really, really lovely lad, good coach. And there's just some coaches, obviously goalkeeping is a very unique position. And some coaches get it and some coaches don't. But yeah, Kev really got it. Heathy really got it. There was a lot of coaches that did get it. Because obviously, it's just, you can have as many coaching badges or as much experience as you could have outfield. But until you're playing goal, it's a very, very different experience, if you know what I mean. So when you have a coach that understands it and gives you the credit you deserve sometimes, it's a really big factor in how well you do. Like, there was experiences near the end where, I don't know if you remember, there was a game for 23s where we played against Holbridge. We drew 0-0. And I had a bit of a worldie.
You could go to games at that level, couldn't you?
We
were both there, yeah.
Yeah, I had a really good game and, everyone was saying how well I did, blah, blah, blah. Chris Phillips was messaging me saying how well he did. And then on the little article, there was with the gaffer at the time for the 23s. And Chris was like, oh, how well did Cal do? And he was like, oh, just done his job and just moved on to everyone else to say how well everyone else done, basically, apart from me. And I got no well done, no nothing. And then the next day, the first thing the manager comes up to me is shows me a video, a clip from the game. And one of the midfielders is pinged the ball. He's tried to pass it back. He's actually put way too much on it, going straight like in the top corner. And I've headed it over the bar. And he's like,
remember that? Right. I remember that. Yeah.
And he's like, why have you not tipped that over? And I was like, well, it was clearly a back pass. And he was like, as long as you don't catch it. And he had me down myself. And I was like, what? And I've searched up the rules and everything. And I definitely couldn't. It still would have been against the rules.
But it's like, hang on a minute, man. You've pulled up one thing that I might have hesitated over all night.
But I was like, I didn't lead to anything. I dealt with it really well. The rules say I did the right thing. And I got no well done, no nothing. And that's the pointer I got. And I don't really want to go.
Mark Molesley that was saying this?
No, this is the 23s manager. So,
okay. Who was that?
Yeah,
who was that at the time?
Ricky Duncan.
Nah, Craig Fagan.
Of course it was.
Yeah,
but it's like, yeah, if that skims off your head and it goes in, then all right, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll take a bit of criticism, but have I kept the ball out of the goal?
Nothing to the midfielder that's pinged it in my head either. I could go into a lot of examples, but that's not what I want to do. But like, example is just, it just felt like at times I was fighting a losing battle for the last 6-7 months that I was there. And that's just a small example, really, of some of the things I was dealing with on a daily basis. And it just become a lot for me because every day was just, that's just a small example, but every day was a fight like that, whether it was in training, in games. I just felt like I was getting so much criticism for just not doing much wrong. And as soon as I did something right, I knew I was getting nothing. So it was almost like I had to play an absolute worldie just to get no grief, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And it became quite a lot for me. And yeah, to be honest, I was in a dark place at that time. And then I left when I did because I went in and spoke to Rick and spoke about the way it was. And it didn't look like the first team would give me any chances. I wasn't getting any goalkeeper training. They wanted me to stay in the season, see what happened. But I was in such a dark place. I was hating football. Like, it was just time for me to go, really. I needed a refresh because it was just becoming too much for me. And it just, at the end of the day, I went home for more than anything.
Yeah. And mature decision to make for a young man.
There was no point. I was never an anxious person. And I was feeling really anxious every single day. And it was a horrible feeling. My parents knew it wasn't right for me to carry on with the way it was going. But it was a shame it ended the way it did. But I don't forget 10 years before and a lot of the good things that happened. But yeah, it's just, it's football, isn't it? There's you're not going to get on with everyone, not everyone's going to like you. It's just life in general, really. But yeah, it's just the way it went. But yeah,
you obviously made a decision for yourself, but that's still quite a brave decision to make at that age, because you easily could have gone, well, I'll stay here, actually, it's football, and you could have made yourself really ill over that. So to make that, you go, actually, you know what, I'm going to step away from this. I think that's a really bold and brave decision.
Yeah,
because the club were like, oh, you're not going to get paid. And I was like, it's not really, I couldn't really care less about, if they offered me 100 grand a week, I didn't want to stay at that point. But it was just, my mind was made up. But it's just the way it went. But yeah, there was a lot of good times. My first year, full-time, wasn't easy at times either, because I wasn't playing, because that's when Harry Seaton was the older goalkeeper, and he was playing every week. And at times, I didn't think that was fair based on training or whether I got an opportunity. I played Youth Cup. I thought I did well. I played in the League Cup against Bournemouth, and I got told I kept us in the game. And we then played Cambridge, who were like competing with us in the league. We beat them. And I threw really good games. And as soon as the other keeper was back, I was just dropped. And I wasn't even given a chat, really, to describe it. But yeah, like I say, that just happens in football. But then my second year, Danny Heath was the manager. And I was loving my football. I was loving it. I was playing every week and I was doing well. But to be fair, Dan was fair. He always gave the other keeper a chance as well in cup games and stuff like that. But I respected it because that's what I would have liked if he was my manager in first year, which he wasn't. But I would have liked that if he was, because I know he's a fair character and I respect him for that. And yeah, I was really enjoying my football, and then I think I was doing well. And then obviously that ended up me being in the first team for a bit. And Lee Harrison was a big part of that as well. He was very, 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 very good for us. But yeah, it was good. But the final year I was there obviously happened, but it doesn't reflect what happened before. But like I say, I don't think I could say I have an issue with anybody that's at the club now, because yeah, the coaches that are there now, not that some of them obviously I haven't had experience with, but even like Mark, there was a time when I was young, I went to train with Candy for a bit of men's experience. He was good to me then. Obviously, I've had experience with Kev. Darren Curry, I've never come across him, but he seems like a really, really good coach to me. And from the lads I know at the club, they say he's brilliant, and he seems like he's brilliant with the fans as well. So I think, yeah, like I say, the club have got, the club have got a really good setup at the moment in terms of the coaching staff. And that's why obviously you're seeing the results in the pitch going the right direction. You're seeing boys that are enjoying their football. You're seeing a squad that's together.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happens. It's just a shame, obviously, you've got the stuff upstairs, but hopefully that resolves itself in time. But yes. Yeah, the fans keep got to do what they're doing. I see them raising all that money as well. Just you don't see many clubs like that in the National League, and that's why I know that whether that's this year, next year, they're going to be back in the Football League, no doubt. Back to where they belong, really.
But no, you're right. It's very conflicting at the moment for a supporter because, yeah, it's like on the pitch, it really couldn't be going much better. But we're all becoming aware of these, you know, the same mistakes that are,
that's
still getting made. Which, you mentioned there where something was said to you, well, if you leave, you ain't going to get paid. So quite ironic, really. So was there ever a time at your time at the club you weren't paid or you were paid late?
Yeah, very, very regularly, yeah. It was more of a shock to be paid on time, if I'm being honest. All the boys were in the changing room. People think, oh, you play football like you have money, but like even the first team level, like don't get me wrong, there was certain people like, I'm not going to say obviously people, because that's their own business.
But that's not many names.
They were on good wages, but obviously I don't think they're going to be people on wages anywhere near as big as that now. But still, like I say, whether you're first team or youth team, like you're not getting 100 grand a week. You can't just not get paid. You can't get paid late. People have car insurance where they might be paying. They might have car loans. They might have even like mortgages, and they've got mouths to feed. Like, and you can't just stop paying people late. And half the team have been paid and half the team hadn't. It just felt like from a professional club. At the time, majority of the time I was at the club, we were a League One club. We were pushing towards the Championship, and it was like that. And it was a shame. Like, there was a time where we, not all the time was it ridiculously late. It might be a few days, but you should be getting paid on time. Like any other workplace isn't like that. But there was times where it was pretty late. There was a time where it was, like, I think similar to what happened to the youth team at the moment, where it was, must have been approaching 2 weeks. And I remember we were gone with it, because the thing is, they have you by the throat in terms of this is your dream, and you can't say anything, because if you start kicking off, you're worried that they're going to change their affection on you. So especially the younger lads, just get on with it. But that's why I was actually to see the youth team do that, I thought that's really, really good. Like, fair play to them. I think that's takes some balls to do that, but it's a good thing. They've got to do what they've got to do. Like, I know that, especially at that age, I know from personal experience, getting trains where they're getting petrol, whatever it is, that you might not have any money until you get that. Like, and they're just expecting the lads to get on with it, which I think is ridiculous. And I know the fact that the chairman picks and chooses who he pays. Let's just say that. He knows who he needs to pay first, because he thinks, oh, the others will get on with it. Because I know that there's academy staff that still haven't been paid now for at this period in time.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that's... Sales,
aren't we? Yeah. But yeah, we know a couple of the coaches, again, won't name names, but we're aware of some academy coaches that haven't been paid and have, you know, historically been, as you say, been paid late. This isn't a new thing, but it's not a way you can run any business.
Yeah, it's not. Like, even when before I was getting paid, when I was just like academy player, I remember, like, when I spoke to some of the coaches, and they'd be like, yeah, we still haven't been paid, or we haven't been paid the right amount. And that's what led to a lot of coaches leaving. Like, I'm not going to name coaches, but there was very, very good coaches at the club who I got on with well. And the reason why they didn't end up there is because, whether that means Southend being tight, they don't offer them a full-time contract, or they're offering them the very minimal wage, or they're just not paying them time, whatever it is. And that's why a lot of people leave. And I think Southend have lost a lot of good people due to a lot of the stuff that goes on in the background.
Yeah.
And I think that's a shame. But like I say, since I was like 10, 11, I remember coaches saying about not being paid on time and stuff like that. So it's an issue that it needs to be solved. And obviously the chairman needs to find a way that if he's going to stay in the club, he's got to sort that out, or maybe there's someone better out for the club out there. But actually, that's not my place to talk about. But yeah, just I don't think it's a very a very healthy thing. And I know it pisses off a lot of players and it pisses off a lot of coaches, and it's not going to lead to a healthy environment. Like the youth team, I believe they have a youth cup game coming up, and that's all been overshadowed by not being paid and strikes. Yeah. And that's not their fault. But like the fact that that's been led to happen from up above, I just think is very, very unfair. And I know that a lot of the wages for youth team is not paid by the club as well. And I'm not sure if it's different now in the Football League, but I know when we were there, the EFL paid a big majority of the wages.
No, but we believe that is still the case. They still get EFL funding.
So where's that money going?
Yeah.
To me, that suggests that he's got the money and he's giving it to, like I say, the priority people first, which I think is ridiculous, to be honest.
Well, it's illegal.
But it's very
that's why, but it's illegal,
yeah.
So.
Yeah. But, yeah, just like I say, I don't really know how they're going to solve that unless...
Yeah,
that's what I mean. When we were seeing things like the new stadium, which is going to cost however many million, or we bought the David Beckham Dome, I don't think fans realise, like, I don't think they forget, we paid, like, I think it was like £2 million for the David Beckham Dome. I think I was like 12. And I was thinking, oh, maybe when I'm youth team, it'll be up in time. I'm 21 in 2 months and it hasn't moved.
So much of it has now got so much rust on it. We can't use it.
What I was going to say. That's just going to be sold as, it's just scrap metal now, which I think this is some of these decisions I just don't get. And I'm not going to name players, but when there was a time in the club where I was hearing certain players won 9-10 grand a week and we were not getting paid, or people were not getting paid at all, or they were not getting paid on time. And I was just like, I get you have to, he was trying to, maybe he was trying to sign certain players to get to the next level, but like there's two big risks for just getting thrown around. And obviously that season when we got relegated from League One to League Two, a lot of the big names went out the door. And it was the right thing at the time, because he had to do what he had to do to get the wage structure down. But I thought that would solve a lot of the issues, but it clearly hasn't. But there's just obviously a lot more going on that even me or people in the club probably don't even know about. But that's what probably Ron knows what's really going on. I'm not sure.
I think the books have got to be so dirty. I'm not even 100% sure he does know everything.
I'd agree with you there. Like, but yeah, the people at the club now, I still speak to them, and I'm not going to say who, but yeah, they. All I can say is that on the pitch and on the training ground, it's a lot better than it has been in recent years anyway, and it's definitely heading in the right direction, which is a massive positive. But obviously, at the end of the day, if the bigger issues aren't solved, I would hate for it to happen. You never know, the club could fold or something like that. And at the end, that wouldn't matter. And then the rest wouldn't matter, which is why it needs to be sorted out.
Yeah.
But obviously, I really hope it never gets to that.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club. Because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
But all these wind-up orders and court dates, even as a club, it just overshadows it. And fair play to the first team. It looks like they're just putting it behind them. They're going and doing the whole thing. But eventually, if that carries on, it's going to overshadow. It's going to affect the training ground. It's going to make people wonder if they're still going to have a football club in a few months. And obviously, for the fans, it'll be a horrible, horrible feeling if you lost your football club. But hopefully it doesn't get to that. But if you just like one more example of when I was there, there was a time where we went out to train because we hadn't been paid in like 2 weeks, and then we obviously found out the first team hadn't. This is when I was only about 16, I think, and they were having a meeting upstairs, and they were like, if we're not paid, maybe I think it was by that evening or maybe the next day, it was like we're going on strike, and they were like, and they told us like basically to do the same thing. And then I think we got paid very late that night. But like I say, it's like scoping things around, like getting it from there, getting it from there. Like the money's somewhere, but it's just being prioritised in certain ways, which I think is where a lot of the issues come from. But yeah, not really much more I can say about it.
It's still the same, to be honest, mate. What you're
still
saying,
still the exact same.
You know, basically yeah. Threatening to go on strike, and then at that time, all the money appears. Yeah. It's still the same.
Yeah, exactly.
At the moment, it hasn't filtered into the first team squad, but it's probably only a matter of time. The players aren't stupid. They know what's going on. They know there's various members of like the admin staff not getting paid. So they've got to be having their little conversations amongst themselves, thinking it's only a matter of time, isn't it, before we are late. Like,
them conversations, they do happen whether fans leave or not. They do happen. They happen in the changing. They happen back in the day. And it's people like the players want the best for the club. They want to do well. But at the end of the day, it's still their job. And people forget that. And they have families to feed, and they have things that they need to do. So when that stuff's going on, it's going to stress them out just like any other normal person in the world would be stressed out if they're not being paid on time, if they're not being paid at all, or they're being underpaid. It's just, I know that's going to affect on the pitch. And I'd say that's no one's fault apart from the people that should be paying.
Yeah, no, literally that. We might as well try and bring it back to a bit more of a lighter note.
Yeah.
But, obviously, your time at the club, you played for Northern Ireland, all the age groups, didn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, well, how did that come about to start with? And, who have you got to play with? And I guess where?
You say you qualify through your dad, is that right?
Yeah. So my dad, he was born in Northern Ireland, grew up during a lot of the troubles over there. Met my mum on a holiday with his friends and, fell in love or whatever you want to call it. And, he moved over and obviously they had me eventually. And, so I've always, to be honest, like that's why I supported Man United, because my dad was just, first top I was given was a Man United top. And, He was drilling me from day one. I was supporting Northern Ireland, to be honest. But before I supported England, I didn't really care, because my dad, that, at the end of the day, if your dad tells you at that age, goes. So I was watching Northern Ireland games. Yeah, just, and I really enjoyed it. And just to be honest, whenever I used to go over there quite a lot, I still go over there quite a lot, I try to. And the people are just so friendly over there. It's just the small things, like if you go out for a walk in England, like, a lot of people won't make an effort. Like obviously, some people would, but Northern Ireland, everyone talks to everyone. Everyone's asking how you are. And I just fell in love with that, the culture, if you know what I mean, the way, how kind everyone was. So, yeah, I always had a thing. I was always watching Northern Ireland and always forgot to it when I played for England, maybe. Depends where I was in my career. But, yeah, I really, really enjoyed watching them and going over there. And then when I was, I think I was 2016, I was, yeah, so I was 14, yeah. So I was 14, and me and my dad went to the Euros to watch Northern Ireland against Ukraine, and we won. And we met some people on the way back, and they were asking questions about me. And we were saying, oh, I play for Southend, blah, blah, blah. And they were like, oh, we're like coaches at Northern Ireland, blah, blah, blah. Like, would you be interested? And I was like, well, definitely. So they got me over for a training camp, and I did well, and yeah, then I started playing regularly. I played in 2 Milk Cups, played in the Victory Shield, beat Scotland, beat Wales, played against Belgium, where Jeremy Doku was playing. And he plays in France now. He starts for Belgium quite a lot. He'll be out there in the World Cup, probably played quite a few games. Very, very good player. I really enjoyed it. To be honest, the Northern Ireland camps were good in a way. Obviously, I played against a lot of good players, even so I think I've been playing against a lot of Cat 1 teams. But for Northern Ireland, I was playing against the best of the best, and in front of big crowds. Obviously, this is before I played first team for Southend, so big crowds I'd never done before. Going away to different countries regularly. And to be honest, the setup was a lot more professional than sometimes it was at Southend, which was obviously a new experience for me, which I really enjoyed as well. So yeah, to be honest, I really, really enjoyed it. Even up to 2 months ago, I was like, there was two kids picked, and if one of them was injured, I was going to play Scotland for the 21s, even now. So it's still there, it's still hanging around. And then, I think I did quite well whenever I played for them, and the lads are really, really good. And I've got good mates. My mate Connor Bradley plays for Liverpool. He's already made his first team debut. He's made his Champions League debut. He's a good friend of mine. Got lads at Chelsea, Arsenal, City. Like they're all over the place, to be honest. There's a big mixture. But even at that level, there's lads that don't really enjoy football anymore or didn't make it to where they wanted to go. But there's a lot of people that have done really well. And yeah, I really, really enjoyed Northern Ireland. It was, yeah, good experience for me. And maybe in the future, I might play for them again. But yeah, so yeah, enjoyable.
You know, it's a great experience.
Yeah. It's like obviously not a lot of people get to do it, you know, play for their country or a country at a certain age group. So I always find it quite fascinating, really, at such a young age you can play for your country.
Yeah, it was new because it was quite, I was at school and the early years of secondary school, sometimes I would get a little bit of jealousy that I was playing for that professional team. But the more people matured, I think people more appreciated it. And then, especially when I started playing for Northern Ireland, a lot of people were like, they found it very, very interesting. I got a lot of feedback from even teachers watching me and coaches watching me. And yeah, and there was a point where in the Victory Shield, I played against Wales, and a good mate of mine, Dan Comfrey, was the other goalkeeper who I was competing with at the time to get a scholarship. And he was playing for Wales, and we played against each other in the final game. And I knew that I was having all the boys in the group chats were watching it on the live stream. I knew all the coaches were watching. And luckily, we won 1-0, but yeah, it was a nervy day. But especially last minute when they got a free kick just on the edge of just inside our half. Dan come up to take the goal kick from in goal. And I was thinking, what if this catches a bit of wind and flies in the back of the net? I was like, I'm never going to return to Southend if that happens. But luckily, we got over the line. But yeah, like I say, it was just a very, very good experience. And yeah, Northern Ireland setup is really good, to be honest. And I'm sure they didn't have as good of a setup as a lot of countries 20 years ago, but they've really changed their setup. And I experienced a lot of that. And I think in 10, 20 years, you'll see that within the first team. And you're seeing the players like the lad from Liverpool breaking through already and starting every game for Northern Ireland first team now. So I think they'll see a lot of that progress in the years to come, really.
Yeah, yeah. So you end up making your debut for Southend against, was it Coventry?
Coventry, yeah. Right. So
that car, I can't remember how it came about. Was it an injury or a red card claim?
Yeah, so I've been in the game. I've been in the bench for 5 or 6 games, and let's just say Ox got injured a fair amount. He had a bit of a dodgy back, I think, and so I was always ready. And there was a game. I don't know if you remember that season. We beat Lincoln 2-1.
Yes.
And
yeah.
Elvis scored in the last minute.
Yeah.
And I was on the bench for that game. But I got like a text that morning from Chris, like Chris Phillips. He was like, "You starting?" And I was like, "I don't think so." and then I got there and Lee's pulled me over. He's obviously heard because Ox had a knock and Lee was like, "Be ready to play. I'm pretty sure you're going to be playing." And I was like, "Oh, I don't know." And I didn't really have time to think about it. I was excited, obviously a bit nervous, but excited. And eventually Ox did the warm-up and he was feeling it a lot and I thought I was going to play, but he got through the game. But I think nearly every single game Ox went down at least once. Yeah. So I was warming up quite a lot. And one of the games was Peterborough away. I think we lost 4-0. Peterborough were very good, but Ivan Toney was playing for Peterborough at the time. And I knew Ivan Toney was good even though we all knew because he was one of the top scorers in the league. But Ox went down in like the 5th minute. It was like -3 degrees, 20,000. I've been sent to warm up. I'm getting abuse already. I'm thinking, Jesus Christ. A lot of me wanted to come on, Bob. So you got that bit of you like, shit, like, Jesus. But, yeah, Ox got through the game, but he was up and down all game. Amy, the physio, was like sending me out, like, she wanted to treat him and come back. Like, is he right? He's like, nah, you're going to be coming on. So every game I was getting told I was going to be coming on. So I was kind of used to the feeling of it. But yeah, it would have been good to play against Ivan Toney. But yeah, maybe for the best. But yeah, yes. Then Coventry game was actually one of the games I think Ox hadn't gone down and hadn't complained about any injuries. And then I think he ran out, cleared one, and then he had a goal kick, and something's gone in his leg. And I knew he was done. It was pretty obvious. And everyone's like, get ready. So like 1 second ago, I was just sitting there chilling, watching the game. 10 minutes left. And this is all the games I was on the bench. It was absolutely freezing. It was when there was all them storms going around. I can't even remember what they were called, but they always had all sorts of names. And Ox was in the end, went directly into wind as well. And I'm thinking, oh, Jesus Christ. So Ox goes down. I'm like, yeah, I'm dressed completely because I'm like, he's definitely coming off. I knew. Went on straight towards the Coventry fans. I think there's like 2,500 of them behind the goal. Getting all sorts of abuse. All sorts. it went up for a throw in, so I got they threw it back to me. And I'm thinking, like, I'm kicking this directly into like a hurricane. I'm thinking, Jesus Christ. hit a decent strike, and it's just gone up, and it's just hit the wind, and it's just carried on coming back. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. And then like 10 seconds later, they've ended up coming through, and I've had to make a save. And I was still freezing. I was absolutely, but yeah, it was a really good experience. The Coventry fans were singing, you're going back to school in the morning. And they obviously got my Instagram up and they started chanting my girlfriend's name and all sorts. I was having a little chuckle to myself, but to be honest, they were really, really good. When the game ended, when I went up to get my water bottle, they all gave me a massive clap, and I got like 1,000 new followers that were all Coventry fans. And some of them still message me now asking how I got them. They were good fun. It's all banner, isn't it? But
yeah,
it was a good experience, and that's what I wanted to do. I enjoyed that, and it was a big part of it for me. But yeah, like I said, I was happy I kept the clean sheet. I was like, can't be posted on Instagram if I made any mistakes. And that was Daisy. But then went out, had a good night, and then obviously a few weeks later, I think there was one or two games. They bought that lone keeper in from Brentford, Gunnison. I think that was a bit of a shame. I think it was a bit of a shame. They could have, whether it was me or Harry, I think they should have given us a chance, because at that point we were doomed to win us anyway. And I don't think he was all that good anyway from what we saw in training.
And a lot of other youngsters are playing as well. So you think, you know,
yeah,
what's one more?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right. At the time, that was like a 23 side almost. Yeah. But I think there was one or two games, and then COVID happened anyway. Then a lot of stuff changed, obviously, in the world and in the club. It changed completely. When, for me, the biggest change, and I don't think a lot of fans are thinking about it, but I think when Lee left, a lot changed. Because I know, especially for the goalkeepers, you wouldn't find a keeper at the club who said a bad word about Lee. And even I think the outfield players are the same. And I think it was a shame. But I think that was I'm not going to say that was why we then had a bad season under Mark. But yeah, I just think it was, I think changing all the staff, even the ones that have been there throughout different managers was a shame. But yeah, I think that's when a lot changed. But it happens in football, at least Southend are back on the right track now. But yeah, I thought there was a lot of managers. I mean, forget them. So we obviously had Phil Brown when I was younger. But then Chris Powell come in when I first really started going into the full-time environment. And Chris is a lovely, lovely man. He made an effort with everyone. Even when I was the 16-year-old coming in just for the shooting drill at the end of the session, he always made an effort with me, always had a chat with me. Got invited on when I was 16 just to warm up before one of the games. And that was just a big thing for me. Like, it meant a lot to me at the time. And just little things like that. Chris was good, and the players liked Chris, but unfortunately it wasn't working too much at the end. And then I think we had Kevin Bond. Yeah. And
yeah, we did, yeah.
he wasn't there for very long. Because I remember us all being in the changing room. We were hearing, oh, Harry Redknapp's coming in with him. And we were like, oh wow, Harry Redknapp actually did come into the training ground one day.
Yeah.
I was just going to the toilet and I walked out going ready to get lunch and Harry Redknapp walked past me and think, what's going on here? I was like, I didn't know what was going on. But yeah, Kevin, I didn't have that much experience in terms of around the first team environment around Kevin, but when I did, I'll just say he wasn't very well respected. And I in terms of that, I would say sometimes some of the players were probably a little bit unprofessional, some of the stuff I saw, but I don't think he was a very good manager, to be honest. Not in that environment anyway. And then
Gary Waddock was caretaker for like
I remember he came in for a bit. I wouldn't say I have anything bad to say about him. There's a few things I'm not going to speak about because I don't really know what will happen there, but there's a few weird things that happened around that situation. He went, and then was that Sol after that?
Yeah,
that was Sol.
The whole thing with Waddock was the whole Henrik Larsson thing at the time.
Yeah, I keep forgetting.
Oh yeah, I remember
weird.
That. Yeah,
weird.
I remember that was weird.
Yeah,
and Sol come in.
What was
Sol's a weird one?
Yeah, because you hear a lot and you see a lot about Sol.
Yeah,
a bit of an extrovert. Like
he was a. I have good things to say about him because at the end of the day, he gave my debut.
Yeah, sure.
He had me on the bench for him, so like he's a weird one for me. I know certain people won't have as many good things to say about him as I would, but yeah, he was a weird character, but he was a weird character. But
probably enough there, isn't there?
Yeah. he's been there and done
I
it.
I like but, him, but
I don't know. I'd say he didn't seem very invested at times. Like, he would just pop into the changing room and say the smallest thing, and that would be it. And, like, some of the players were looking around confused, like, is that it? And then there was the game. I was on the bench. I want to say it was Doncaster, where he called us Southampton after.
As a player, I'll be honest.
All the team were on the coach, like pissing himself, like what is going on there, watching this video. It was all over Twitter, like proper trending. But the same day, was it Doncaster or was it Peterborough? One of the two. I think we lost both of them. And I think it was after Doncaster, and we got battered. And
but the 7-1 game,
yeah.
Is that one?
No, I won the bench for that one. I think it was. I might be getting confused with the Peterborough game. I just know that we lost heavily. And Sol's come in and said, oh, well done, lads. Like, you did well out there. Like, you put a good fight up. And, like, Stephen McLaughlin said, what the fuck? Like, like he was like, we were absolutely terrible. Like, what are you on about? And even Ox was saying the same thing. Like, what are you on about? Like, we clearly weren't doing very well. And then all the players, like, but then Sol just left. And it was just weird. Like, he just didn't feel like he should have had a lot more to say than what he did.
Yeah.
And I think Stephen McLaughlin was a big character in the dressing room. And I think Southend, even now they're missing, he was a good character and he was a good player as well, but he was a big part of the dressing room. He was one of the players that he was fair, like, to me, he was always nice. And he did the side of it where you look after the youngsters, but he also, you knew not to mess around him, but you knew to do the right thing. And I think then when something we're doing really, really well, there's a lot of characters like that. Whether that was Atkinson at the top when he was doing really well, and Leonard and Dimitru, and even like Fortuné and people like that. There was a lot of big characters and a lot of people had been there and done it, but they were still putting it in. It showed, and as soon as you lost a lot of them characters or people that just didn't really care as much, there were certain players that had been there, done that, that had that fight, almost like, I'm not going to compare it to Roy Keane, but that same like authoritative figure in the dressing room. And then there were certain characters from the Prem that you knew were just there for like a little payday. And I think in the end, you lost a lot of the characters and a lot of people there for the paydays come in, and I think that's when it all went very wrong. Because on paper, you had players that played for like Burnley and Blackburn and all sorts, like but they just weren't doing it. They weren't cutting it in League One. Like, and I think that's a big part of it. It's just not about, obviously, how good you are. It's about the mentality. And the mentality feeds into the younger players. And that shows there's a lot for where they go. And even, like, I know a lot of South End fans don't like him now, but Elvis was a good character. And I'm not even sure myself really what happened near the end. But,
yeah, none of us are really sure. Very strange scenario that, and quite sad, really. Yeah. A player that young didn't play for virtually a whole year.
Yeah, it was. But like I say, with some of the issues that went on around in the background, I wouldn't say, oh, he's done the wrong thing, because I don't know what happened to him, because I don't really know what might have been going on. But yeah, definitely a very weird situation. But he was a good character, even from, because he got bled in when he was so young. And he was around a lot of them big characters when the club were doing really well, pushing on towards the playoffs in League One. I think that drew into him. And he was, when I made my debut, he was the first one to come over to me, spoke to me, gave a bit of reassurance. He was doing it every day in training. He did it to a lot of people. And Elvis was a very good player as well. And I know there was times where there was Premier League teams and Championship teams around him. Whether that got into his head, I don't know. I'm not saying it did, because I've never seen it myself. Maybe that crept into his head, and that where a lot of the issues come from, because obviously I think he's playing Iceland now. I'm not sure he's still there, but
I haven't seen anything that he's not playing in Iceland.
It was a weird one, but like I say, it just showed how big characters were in the dressing room, I think. And obviously, I don't know 90% of the Southend squad now, because obviously there's been a lot of ins and outs, but I'm going to guess there's a lot of good characters in there. They're heading in the right direction again. And from what the players I do speak to that are still there tell me, I think that is the case. But yeah, just been a lot of good experiences.
Yeah, yeah. That season, actually, going back to that, when you were saying towards the end, it was basically a 23 team. Do you think that was a good thing for you and your teammates in terms of your age bracket, or? Or was it a bit maybe too much too soon, too much at once, and it kind of had the opposite effect?
Yeah, for me personally, I don't think it did me any harm. But I wasn't playing every week like people like Tom Clifford at the time were, and when he was still very young, and even Terrell. And Terrell's a lovely lad and a really hard worker, but like, he shouldn't have been playing every week at that age. Like, all of a sudden, it shouldn't have been happening. Like, he should have been bled in. He just went from like nothing to like Southend number seven within like a few months, and it all happened very, very quickly. And I guess you could, it's probably dependent on the player, dependent on the personality, but I don't think it was a good thing in general, because you, like I say, you need them characters around you. So like for Elvis, he went in very young, but he had so many big characters around him, it got him to where he needed to be. Like, he made him a very good player. But if you're surrounded by just 23s, there's no one to learn off of, and you're just out there hung to dry. And I felt bad for some of them players. They were obviously, I'm not, the majority of fans very, very good, but obviously there's going to be some fans that hate us and give people stick. And like, some people were like 18, 19, and they were playing League One every week, like, and they were getting stick. I was like, these lads should be just getting to learn their trade. They shouldn't be having to keep a club in a bit of a crisis at the time, like up on their own. Like, I just think, yeah, it was a bit too much.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of fans do recognise that for a lot of the lads. But yeah, like at the end of the day, I think I would say Tom Clifford was an example of someone who did help. I'm not sure how well he's been doing ever recently, but at the time he was doing very well. I remember he was probably our best player for quite a big portion of that season. But yeah, I guess it's just depending on who you are and the situation, but
yeah,
we definitely could have done better. But like I say, I think that situation had to happen financially, because a lot of the big names, like the squad at the start of the season, the squad at the end of that season were like completely different.
Yeah,
we had a lot of big names, ex-prem, and a lot of them went because they went by a mutual consent, because they couldn't afford the wages anymore. And I think that was there was a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes even then, and probably more so even more than now, I'd say, than a lot of the stuff that was going on behind the scenes then. But yeah, in one hand, it had to happen. But yeah, I think some players probably got hurt by that when it wasn't really their fault. But yeah, the club's more in a a better place now. There's youngsters and they're getting given chances, but they're not being reliant on like people like Ollie Coker. Ollie Coker's a very, very good player, and I have no doubt that he's going to play at a very high level. Even Tommy Davis, he's a good centre half, and he's a very, very good lad, and he's got a great attitude, and I think he'll do very well. And he's given opportunities where as far as seen, he's done well. But if this was a few years ago, he'd have been playing every single game.
Yeah.
And it was in League One. Like, it probably would have been too much.
Yeah.
But, I think the setup in terms of that is definitely in a better shape than it was then.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. So, obviously, you said you're at uni now, but, I mean, what else? Are you still playing football? Or?
So, basically, when I left Southend, I went on quite a few trials and I did get quite a few offers. I got offers from Football League. I got offers to play abroad. I got offers to play over in Ireland. And I went and did a few. I trained with a few clubs. I was training with Fulham for a while. I was training with Birmingham City for a while. I was training with Glentoran over in the Irish League for a while. And I got offers from certain places. And to be honest, I don't want to blame, but the last year really did like a lot to my mental health. And I just wasn't enjoying football anymore. I really, really wasn't enjoying football, and I was like, do I want to put myself through this if I'm not in the right space for that now? And to be honest, a lot of it, I saw how quickly, when I was at Southend, we were a League One club pushing for Championship, and then you click your fingers and you're in the National League. And there was a time when we were in the National League where it didn't look like whether we were going to stay up in the National League. Like, it looked like National South for a bit, at the beginning of last season. And, like I say, I just realised how quickly football can change. And obviously, Championship, Prem, very, very secure. You get long-term contracts. You're pretty secure in that job. But League One, I've seen so many boys or even men playing for Southend every week, and then they're playing in like the Isthmian Prem a year later. And I'm like, there's no security to it. And I was like, do I want to do this for a few years, get a few one-year contracts, maybe play a few League One games, League Two, whatever, and then that club get relegated or they don't want me anymore, or whatever, they go up and they want someone better. And then I've stuck with nothing else. And then what do? I don't want to be... People don't realise that... I don't think I was quite an intelligent lad, but I didn't get to do any A-levels, anything like that. Because as soon as you leave school... You're in it every day, and we go to college once a week, but the course we're put on is like nothing, like it's really nothing, like it's not seen as very well at all. So I was like, I've got nothing to fall back on. Say I'm 23, 24, and then the best offer I'm getting is Conference South or something like that, where I can't, it's not full time.
Yeah.
What am I going to do? Like, and me personally, I'm not really... You're not going to see me on a building site or something like that. Like, it's not really my sort of thing. And I know that I wouldn't want to do that. So I was like, do I want to put myself in a position where there's no security? So I was like, spoke to my parents. I had a lot of chats for a long time. And I was like, I want to go and get some security in my future and get a degree in something that I know. And then I've been playing at uni, and this one is the standard here is very, very good. Like, we've got player last year, one of our striker. He's 29 because he came a bit later, but he's played against Perlo. He's played 11 games in the first team. He played for United, City, Wolves. Like, he's been there, done that. So I've got players, foreign players that play for Anderlecht, Benfica. Like, I'm not missing out on anything to train. And if I'm honest, I get more goalkeeper training here than I ever got at Southend.
Mm.
To be honest, like, I get every day here, and that wasn't always the case when I was at Southend, which is bad, but yeah. But so I'm getting the training, I'm getting fit, and I've had time to work on my mental health and look after myself, get the security. And I think when I complete my degree, see what I'm doing. If I get a good offer, like I still speak to certain managers that still message me now, and certain coaches, and there's a few places I could at the very least get a trial at when I come back out and see where I'm at, really. And if I get offered a really good job, whether it's based off my degree, maybe I'll go into that and I'll just play a decent level part-time or whatever. I just see what happens, really. But I know that my mental health would be better with that security, and I know if my mental health is better, I will play better. So it's almost like a win-win situation for me.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, when I complete my degree next year, I'd have just turned 22. So, like, I'm still going to be very young. So, yeah, to be honest, I'm just seeing where it goes. I'm not putting any pressure on myself. I'm not putting any pressure on the situation. But that way I know I've got, at the very least, I'm going to have a decent job that I'm going to enjoy. So that's why I did it, really.
Yeah, I think it's really impressive that I said it earlier, a very brave but a very intelligent decision to do that. Yeah. You know, you've seen that, you know, where football can go so quickly, and you've gone, you know what, I don't want that. I'm gonna do my own thing, make sure my mental health's sorted, and then go from there. I think it's a really good thing you've done.
Thank you very much. Yeah, appreciate that.
And I think there's a massive message there for a lot of, well, for any player really, but particularly for youngsters that are maybe sort of a little bit stuck in that horrible crossroads of when you leave a club, what do I do now?
Yeah.
So there is a life away from football.
Yeah. I think people, because you're in it from, especially if you get to that stage, you've probably been at such a young age in the full-time environment. And like, obviously I wasn't full-time, but when I was 9, I was training like 5-6 times a week, balanced with school. Like, my life was very full on. I didn't go to parties at all, really, in my life. Like, I went to like 3 parties the whole time I was at school, because I always had something going on, and I made it my priority. But so it does feel like it's everything, but you've got to just sometimes look at the bigger picture and realize there's more going on. And a lot of lads will come out and they'll be like, okay, I've been released, Prem Club are not letting me in, champ. They'll go the whole way down, whether that's Conference South, whether that's Isshin Prem, whether that's even lower than that, Essex Senior, whatever it is, and they just bounce all the way around and they just keep playing that, hoping one day they're going to go back. And yeah, like, I see a lot of stuff about, oh, Jamie Vardy did this, Jamie Vardy did that. And he did, and I'm not saying to give up, but you've got to have some sort of perspective, because at the end of the day, for every Jamie Vardy, there's 100,000 boys that don't ever then go up that whole ladder. And I think people forget about that. And it's not the dream scenario that everyone wants to hear about, but it's the reality, and sometimes you've just got to have that perspective. And like I say, just because you go and complete a degree for a few years, you can. I could have played, like, Bath City were interested in me up here with a Conference South, and I thought about it. But the problem is, it's like a 11-month a year thing, and the house that I have here is only for like 6-7 months a year. I have to go home for loads of things all the time. It just didn't really work logistically.
Yeah.
But like I say, you can play a good level of men's football, get paid, or you can play for the uni ones, which I do, which are normally, if you go to a decent uni, it's a good standard anyway. It keeps you ticking over, and then it doesn't mean you've given up, or it doesn't mean you're scared or anything. It just means you're in a better position then for your whole world around life.
Yeah.
Just doing your own thing, right?
Yeah.
Just doing what you want to do, you know. So we know quite a lot of people that are in, yeah, the sort of circles you're talking about, the Ispian North and Prem and
Senior
League and stuff. And you're bang on. They just do the rounds. They play for 5 clubs a year. And don't get me wrong, I'd like to play at that level, but they don't get anything out of it. You can tell it's like, you know.
Well, yeah, like, I don't mean there's nothing wrong with playing at that level, but it's for people that think, oh, I'm going to play at this level, do nothing else, because I'm going to go up the ladder. You can't. Yeah. You can't rely on that happening, if you know what I mean.
Not at all, not at all. Yeah, definitely. I think you've made a very, very mature decision.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you.
But,
appreciate it.
Yeah, no, we really appreciate your time, mate.
Yeah,
it's been a brilliant listen. Really fascinating.
Enjoyed it. Yeah, thank you very much.
It's interesting to talk to someone that's at the other end of their career in that sense. I know you're not playing full-time at the moment, but we've obviously spoken to players that have retired, you know, in their 40s and 50s and whatnot. So it's been an interesting.
Thank you very much.
As we say, you've been at the, well, you were at the club for a very long time, and you've still, in that sense, you've left very recently. You've seen a lot, and hopefully a few more eyes will be opened to some of the goings on.
Yeah,
and as you say, I think you're right. I think sadly, a lot of good people, good coaches have had to leave the club. And ultimately that is the club's loss. Because you haven't treated them right.
There's like, I think like 10 plus coaches I can think of in my head that are now Premier League sides, like Champions League sides.
Yeah.
And they just weren't treated right in the end. I'm not saying at the end of the day, like, coaches will move on if they get offers from clubs outside. That just happens in football. But
yeah,
they definitely could have got more out of them at times anyway, because a lot of them haven't just gone, oh, Southend, bang, Arsenal, or bang, Crystal Palace. A lot of the time they've gone through other steps.
Yeah.
Because of the situation they're in, then when they've been given the chance, whether it's in a full-time environment or they're just back properly, they've shown how good they can do.
Yeah.
And a lot of the coaches that have been good to me end up being the successful ones, which is obviously no surprise, because if you're looking after players like that, whether that's mentally or physically or tactically, however it is, you're going to reap your rewards for it. So yeah, definitely.
But yeah, honestly, but yeah, so really, really appreciate it. All the best in the future, and certainly all the best in your degree.
Yeah, good luck with it all, mate. Yeah, really appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much. Good luck Southend this season.
Yeah, cheers, yeah, mate.
Here's hoping, mate. Cheers. Mate. Look after yourself, mate. Later, mate.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What a mature young man.
Yeah, really, really mature. That's also spanning. I wasn't expecting that at all.
I wasn't quite sure what to expect.
No, I was expecting for someone of his age, just to sort of like a...
He's got a great head on his shoulders. Yeah.
It was that. So it was just talking to in a nice way, an older person.
Seasoned pro. And there is a massive message there that there's four young players that there is a life after football. So I think what Cal's gone and done there, he's given himself an education and he's given himself every chance to have the best of both worlds.
Yeah, yeah. And ultimately as well, we can easily go into football and not even be a player if he's going to do a sports science degree.
Yeah.
So, I just thought it was a really fascinating listen. It's interesting to hear him talk about, you know, we obviously didn't want to press too hard when it comes to... It's easy when someone says, "Oh, I didn't like Southend." You go, "Who was it?" You know, or this was happening a little bit, and it weren't great. It's easy to say, "What was it? What was it?" Impressed through it, but so, you know, it's easier also sometimes just let them just say their bit and
yeah. Because to be honest, there were obviously some questions that we had written down. He answered a lot of them just by chatting.
Yeah.
We didn't really have to ask a lot of the questions that we had. But no, really, really, really enjoyed that.
Yeah, no, when you think about it, he was at the club since, 2010, did he say? Or 2009, whatever it was.
Yes. He was there for 10 years. So, yeah, what would that be? Yeah, 2011.
Yeah, so it's a big turnover of managers and players and goings on.
Well, yes, going by that then, he'd have been there when Paul Sturrock was the first team.
That's what I mean. So it's, you know, it's a lot of experience, even at a young age, it's a lot of experience to be able to take in and stuff. So, I found that a really fascinating listen, actually.
Yeah, to be at such a young age and have suffered, you know, all the goings on at Southend, and it did damage him mentally at that point to even have the maturity to have a trial at another club, obviously a bigger club, higher division if you were to get to the first team, but actually stop yourself in your tracks and go, "Do you know what? I'm not sure I'm going to actually enjoy this."
Yeah.
Not sure.
That's such a brave decision, I think. And it's a really mature decision as well. To even at that age, I'll be honest, I think was he 18, did he say?
Something like that, yeah.
18, 19. I don't think 18, 19, I would have thought, this is affecting my mental health.
No, I don't.
I wouldn't even know what you meant.
I know it's different now because it is spoken about more. So maybe 18-year-olds of this generation would. But yeah, when I was 18, I wasn't really aware.
I would have said, "This is my dream. It ain't going to be football. It's going to be something else." Or, "I don't like so-and-so, but that's not me not liking football." I mean, don't get me wrong, it obviously got that bad in the end that it was, he didn't even want to go in. So it is a slight difference. You know, as you were saying, never been anxious before. And also, he's finding himself all of a sudden, anxious in games and going at the track. So that is a giveaway, don't get me wrong. But
But now to have recognised it and stepped away from it and done something about it.
Because, you know, kids, well, I say kids, anyone, you know, us, we would love to play football.
Mm.
And he's potentially given it up, but seen that it wasn't right for him.
Well, it's not all it's cracked up to be. Yeah. And to be honest, we, yeah, that wasn't something that we were really expecting to come out of that chat. We got in touch with him off the back of, you know, the unpaid youth team wages that he made a public tweet on, along the lines of, yeah, not the first time sort of thing. So we invited him on for a chat, and yeah, was not expecting that to sort of come off the back of it.
No.
But yeah, really, really enjoyed that.
What a lovely guy.
Yeah, great guy. All the best. And genuinely wish him all the best.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's probably a good way to wrap it up, actually.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's too much else to be said there, to be honest.
No, we've done the Gateshead preview or whatever.
Yeah. And we are going to improve the turnover of these episodes.
Yeah.
Because our situations will improve.
Yeah, hopefully. Soon. Yeah, thanks for listening on that. I hope you enjoyed it, because I say I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, we've really enjoyed doing that one. So,
and then I just realised we are on Sunday doing one with have we said that already?
Gateshead. Yeah, I was gonna say, because we're technically recording two on Sunday.
Yeah,
but they will obviously go out and stay good. So this is it, we're doing double recording days now.
Yeah, we talked to a Gateshead fan just to sort of kind of, I say we'd rather do it before the game.
In fairness, the Gateshead fans got in contact with us to see if we'd be interested in doing one pre-match. Unfortunately, schedules didn't quite work out at the short notice. So they're going to come and have a chat with us on Sunday, which will obviously be after the game. So that's another one that's going to be good to get that different sort of perspective on.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. See you back soon. See you.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.